The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly slightly drunken Christmas special. All we have is a bunch of your questions, a drink each, and we'll see what happens. It'll either prove that we don't need to do any prep or watch any more football to keep this pod entertaining, or it'll prove we're really not as interesting as we thought we were. We've got festive, upbeat Christmas messages from all your favourite panellists and some panellists you don't like very much. There are hundreds of questions. We won't get through them all, but we'll try our best. Either way, hopefully this gives you an hour away from the people you're stuck inside with, or an hour's company if you're in the same boat as Barry. This is the Guardian Football Weekly Christmas special. Barry Glendenning, nice to see you.
You fucking prick. Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas to you. Hey, Jonathan Wilson, happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas.
Lars Sivertsen, hello. What are you drinking?
Hi, Max. I'm. You know what? I've gone a bit off piste. You said wine, but I just had a box of particularly strong beer delivered from my local brewery. So I have a couple of bottles of an Impy pudding and one called Impy custard, and they're both sort of well over 10%. So it's not wine, but it should do the trick.
Now, this pod, we said slightly drunken. So just to check, Jonathan, what are you drinking and how much have you consumed so far?
I've had probably half a glass so far. It's a Muggle. I think it's the one I brought in. Is it 2 years ago now? It's a new crate, obviously. It's a 2015 Chateau Marsac Segrino.
I've had half a bottle of Estrella. I've got a bottle of Blason de Rhone, which is expensive for me, but I thought this is a special occasion. And Jamie will have half a glass to help me later.
I think you should introduce that as Chateau Neuf de Pape, Max. That's what'll impress people.
Okay, that's what I'm on. I just want to remember, I'm also a man of the people. Okay. So I don't want to, you know, growing up in my house in central Cambridge, we didn't even have a full-size harp in the bedroom. That's how tough it was. Now, Barry, how much have you had to drink?
Well, my day has gone slightly awry. Being a considerate neighbour, I've just done the big shop for my elderly friend and neighbour around the corner. Rupert, Jamaican gentleman, likes his rum. And okay. I brought him some homemade Irish brown bread and I did his big shop. And as my reward, he made me drink 4 cans of lager, which would be fine.
Yes.
But also 2 very generous measures of Ray and Nephew rum. Now, I don't know if you've ever had that, but it is fire water. It is absolutely lethal. So there's a very good chance I will just keel over in the next 10 minutes or start saying incredibly aggressive and inappropriate things. So just producer Joel needs to be on the ball. Let's just say that. I've just opened for the pod a bottle of red 2019 red wine. That's all it said. 19 crimes. It's called.
Producer Joel points out Ray and Nephews is 70%.
Yeah, if
you do fall asleep, Barry, it'll be much like a Europod for you. That's totally.
I thought I asked some very good questions yesterday.
Yeah, I think they were all cut out, but like you did a great job.
Or a train back from Manchester, perhaps.
We all remember the train back from Manchester.
Barry doesn't.
He doesn't. But he did a good impression of the Swedish chef from the Muppets for about an hour.
Which I thought was problematic, really. I mean, there's a word I'm not going to use for it, but it was...
Really? You're not Swedish.
Close enough.
Here's a football question to begin with. Not many questions were football based.
Is it about Arsenal?
It's not about.
I don't want to answer questions about Arsenal. It's Christmas. I deserve a break. We all deserve a break from Arsenal. And Arsenal fans deserve a break from hearing about Arsenal.
John Smith has a question. If VAR had been available during the First World War Christmas truce football match in no man's land, would it have helped ensure a fair game or made an already combustible situation worse? Merry Christmas, and thanks for all the podcasts.
I mean the waiting times would be that much more frustrating if you knew what you were kind of going back to after the game. You would definitely not want to stand around waiting for the VAR.
Wilson?
Sorry, I mean, it's very much disputed how many of these games actually happened and whether they were actually between opposing sides. I mean, the ceasefires clearly happened.
Okay.
But I think there's only evidence of sort of one or two of these games being actually between British troops and German troops. I don't know if that's relevant to the question.
No, but what it's done is it's added some insight to what is not going to be an insightful pod. So that is appreciated, I think.
Yeah, and on the Eastern Front, which was even in the First World War was a really horrific conflict with ethnic cleansing and.
He always has to drag it down, doesn't he?
But it was, straight to the ethnic cleansing.
There was a Russian troops were besieging a Polish city, and it was a horrific siege. And the people within the city were starving, and all the normals were eating rats, eating shoe leather thing. And on Christmas Day, there was a ceasefire, and the Russian troops left sausages for them as a Christmas gift. So, I sort of the cliche of First World War football annoys me because it kind of is grossly romanticized, and yet it also misses kind of quite a key point, I think, which I suppose isn't really what we want to talk about. It would have made it worse, obviously. VAR makes everything worse.
But I would, if I was there, apart from like lying at the very bottom of a trench, pretending to be dead and wetting myself on a regular basis, I wouldn't play in the game. I'd be the guy on the side. It, like when I go to a Dulwich Hamlet game, there'd be lots of guys playing out on a pitch or a mud bath out the front. I wouldn't be paying them much attention.
I mean, I don't want to be crude about this, but that is very much the Irish attitude to war, isn't it?
I'd be swapping cigarettes, having drinks, and showing pictures of my sweetheart back home. That lives only in my head. But I have a question for Jonathan there too. Given the choice, you can only eat one thing. Would you go shoe leather, rats, or sausages left behind by the Russians that
sausages
might be poisoned?
Sausages, yeah.
Even if they might be booby-trapped sausages.
Yeah, I'd take that risk. Yeah, I mean, I think the order's pretty clear. You go sausages. I mean, yeah, you make sure you cook them properly. Yeah, you have them well done. You're not leaving them pink on the inside.
Right.
You make sure about that. Rats second. I'm not sure rats actually are going to be that bad.
Well, eating the rats themselves should be no problem, really.
Yeah, I think we just sort of have a disgust because they're rats. The meat itself.
Yeah.
So if you look at, say, the Siege of Paris during the Franco-Prussian War, rats fetch an enormous price, and it was the middle classes, the upper middle classes, who were eating them. It wasn't poor.
Were the rats more expensive than the tulips? In whenever that tulip thing was.
I mean, in terms of franc per calorie of nutritional value, absolutely they were.
Wow. I'm just wondering if in the First World War VAR, will the pundits be, will I don't know, First Lieutenant Gary Neville and Brigadier Jamie Carragher be saying, it looks like there was contact. He's got every right to go down. I don't know. Christian says, a common discussion among my mates is what kind of sartorial choices we would make if we were football managers. Which of the panel would be tracksuit club shop, junkie a la Pulis, always suited and booted, or trendy high street-like choices from Guardiola? I mean, I'll say first thing. Since Lars looks just like the games teacher from Grange Hill, I can only see him in one of those blue, old 80s tracksuits with the two white lines down the side.
I think I'd call up Big Sam for some advice, for how to, someone who is of a formidable physique, how you can make that look imposing through the right, choice of garment. You know, take some advice from Big Sam.
Wilson, what would you be?
I'd definitely be a suit. Although having said that, I think the most sport I've ever felt was, it was a hockey match when the previous week we'd had 2 red cards and 9 yellow cards, which in hockey is some achievement and a disgrace. And I hadn't been there. And red cards are month suspension in the Surrey League. And one of the people who'd been sent off was our captain. So I had to take over captaincy the following week. And we were playing third in the league. And we beat them 3-0. And I set us up brilliantly. Switched to 4-4-2 in the middle of the first half. Changed the game. And I remember coming off about 5 minutes ago, putting a rain jacket on over my kit because I knew I wasn't going to go back on. Drenched in sweat. It was kind of a damp day. I was like steaming. Wearing this rain jacket kind of but loose. And then making another substitution. And I remember telling the lad who was coming on, like, make sure, and you're pointing at him, you're pointing to the far side of the pitch, make sure you don't let the fullback pass you. Whatever you do, don't let the fullback pass you, because we control the midfield. The only way we lose that is if a fullback joins in. So whatever you do, push it back. And you're doing all the hand gestures. And then as the kid came off, who he was replacing, he was a kid, like 17, 18 year old kid, like clasping his hand and sort of putting my arm on the shoulder, sort of, well played, so I thought you were great today, son. And that, with the loose rain jacket, felt tremendous.
Mm. I mean, part of me would like either Barry and I to be in sort of Yogi Love and his assistant white shirts. It's a bit too tight. Or maybe just MR and BG. And BG is just sitting like Sammy Lee applauding everything while I'm making decisions. I'm happy with either.
I think I'd like a gimmick, like
Nagelsmann.
I think, you know, a Labrador, like Brian Clough or something.
He didn't take it to games with him.
Well, he used to sit his son in the dugout. A young Nigel used to sit in the dugout.
His son wasn't a Labrador.
I'm not saying Nigel Clough was a Labrador. I'm just saying you could up it. You know, you could. Is there a rule that says you can't have a Labrador in the dugout beside you? I mean, I think if Lars was a manager, I'd very much like to see Lola, the half wolf, on the touchline beside him. Her growling and snarling at opposition players.
And more importantly, her with a piece of paper handing it to James McArthur, telling him who to mark in corners.
Well, I mean, that could get controversial because, you know, a lot of dogs are fond of chasing the ball. But Lola is very clever. She's discovered that the best way of getting a ball by far is to take out the opposition first. So she wouldn't run into the field going after the ball. She'd be trying to catch and knock out whoever's chasing it. Now, this has made her very unpopular down the dog park. She's shoulder barged a few sheepdog in her time, which, given the sort of weight disadvantage the sheepdogs have, is not very good. You just sent them flying and all. But no, I would definitely take Lola to the. I think she would be very distracting, whether intimidating or not. I think that would be good.
A couple of weeks ago, Lars, I went on, I suppose it was kind of a date, a blind.
Oh, hello. What's this? Suddenly.
So it was a romantic evening. Drinking a bottle of wine with a lady on a bench by the bandstand in Clapham Common. Basically, I was a wino.
I have a question. How long had she been on the bench?
Oh, 15 years. But it was like 8, I don't know what, 7 o'clock at night. And loads of people are out walking the dogs. And I had no idea this was a thing. And I'm curious to know if Lola has this fashion accoutrement. Shiny collars, like luminous dog collars, presumably so that if your dog runs away in the dark, it makes them easier to find. But it was quite disconcerting seeing just basically all these luminous green or purple or yellow or orange circles levitating around the bandstand.
Now, are you sure you were outside? Are you sure you were with a woman? There's so many things that don't. There are so many things that don't add up here. Okay, that'll do for part one, and maybe the whole thing. Obviously, there's the three panelists here with me today, but there are plenty more panelists besides who fill Football Weekly during the season. I've got a few of them to send you a Christmas greeting.
Hello, pod listeners. Mark Langdon here. Just wanted to wish everyone a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And a reminder that sausage meat isn't just for Christmas. It's all year round.
Hello, Football Weekly crew. It's Nick Ames here. I'm sure that by now most of us are pretty desperate for 2020 to be over, aren't we? And I'm not only saying that because I'm walking to another Arsenal home game at the Emirates as we speak. But there's a few days of it left. There's still quite a bit of fun to be had. So I hope that you and all your loved ones are able to celebrate in the best way possible. Lots of food and drink when you can. And have fun. And then we'll turn the page again next year. And also thank you as well for listening to Football Weekly and to reading the Guardian football pages. I think this year it's more important than ever to have that sense of these little communities here and there that we all have. And this is definitely a wonderful one. So it's really appreciated by everybody. And look forward to talking to you all again ASAP. Cheers.
What's happening, Guardian Football Weekly listeners? It's Jordan Jarrett Bryan here. I've been on a couple of handfuls of shows since the summer, so I guess I'm a semi-regular contributor, and for that I'm very grateful. I've never really particularly cared for Christmas, but those that do, cool, enjoy yourselves, have fun. Don't particularly care for people telling me that I should get involved in the spirit. It's not for me. I don't have kids and I'm not particularly religious, so I don't understand the point of getting excited about it if you don't fall within those two brackets. I'll be working through Christmas as well, but yeah, knock yourselves out, everyone. Have a great Christmas, except for the Aston Villa fans, because you guys... Well, I don't really like you. But everybody else, yeah, have a good, great Christmas and eat lots of food. Peace.
Happy Christmas, everyone. I really hope you've enjoyed listening to these podcasts. They've been fun to do, frankly, when we're all stuck at home and not doing a lot. So hopefully they've brought a little bit of fun into your lives as well. Even if, like me, the actual football team you support has brought you nothing but misery.
Right, what am I going to say? Okay. Very happy Christmas to everyone. Very Karim Benzema. And I hope you all have a great new year. I think I speak for everyone when I say sod off 2020.
Ho, ho, holy Carruthers Christmas, Football Weekly fans. I'm sorry, that is almost as bad as talking in the third person, isn't it? Faye wishes you a very Merry Christmas. Shocking behaviour. Listen, you are a bunch of legends. Thank you so much for making Football Weekly so much fun. Also, thanks massively to Max and Barry, obviously, who keep a smile on our faces throughout the year. It has been a shitty 2020, but here's hoping 2021 is much better. Up the Hatters!
Happy Christmas, Football Weekly listeners. It's Barney here. Enjoy the festive period. I know it's been tough this year. It's been a fairly bleak year for lots of people, but I always like to take the positives, which I suppose are that the football will probably be on any moment soon because the football is always on. So there's that. There's a good chance if you're in the right tier, you actually don't have to see your family this year, which I know we're supposed to be publicly upset about, but we know, don't we? And third reason things will soon get better, well, this podcast will soon be over, so life will immediately improve in a very marginal kind of way then. Anyway, happy Christmas and a Merry New Year.
Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Jonathan Wilson, Barry Glendening, Lars Sivertsen on the slightly or increasingly drunken Christmas special. Thanks so much for listening to it. Thanks for still listening to it, given the quality of part one. Chris asked the question, mainly to me. Now Scott McTominay can score. Is Max worried that he'll run riot at Wembley in June versus England? Do you know what I am? I obviously think that England will win the European Championships. I'm not convinced they'll happen, but I think they might. But I'm starting to get worried that Scotland have got quite a good team, and it's starting to make me feel a bit sick with nerves, just generally as we get closer to a major championship. The sort of hope, fear, panic, excitement all gets a bit too much for me. Am I right to start worrying, Barry, or not?
Oh, I think you should be worried, Max. I was born in 1973. England won their last tournament of any significance 7 years before that. Sunderland won their last trophy of any significance 2 months later. You will not win the Euros. I mean, it's England. And again, I can't reiterate enough, one of the happiest moments of my life was watching you watch England lose against Croatia in the World Cup in Russia. But do you honestly believe England could win this tournament? That's what makes me laugh.
I think they could. I don't think they will, but I think they could. Jonathan, you're a more glass half empty England fan than me, I'd say.
Not really an England fan. Okay. That's...
Do you not want them in like a major championship? Are you not bothered about who wins it?
I'd have a minor preference for England to win, but when you cover England and there's so much goes on around England that a large part of you just think, oh, get these fuckers out. and I had that really badly in Russia. That kind of I didn't cover England until the semi final. Mm-hmm. And I'd become very pro England. I was sort of enjoying it. And I was enjoying the pictures from home, and they seemed a likable team. And then it got to the semi final, and I was sort of immersed back in that world. And it's just, oh god, this is awful.
Malk says, "I'd like you to challenge Barry on his hair washing to changing bed linen ratio. he gets irate if you don't change your sheets twice a week, but yet washes his hair once a year." Barry, I challenge you.
Well,
no, sorry, there's no well here. Your sheets don't wash themselves, whereas your hair has a natural cleansing mechanism within it, so that if you use hot water, within a couple of weeks of stopping using shampoo, it's absolutely fine. Whereas sheets, if you don't wash them, just get filthy and stink.
I would like to largely agree with Wilson on this, but I recently... I had severe IT issues with my work laptop and had dealings with someone in the work IT department, which basically ended. We spent 3 productive hours, I think, gradually coming to hate each other. And then eventually he just went, look, I'll send you a new work laptop. So I took delivery. And, you know, I suppose it's a perk of the job. I took delivery of a nice new shiny Mac laptop. And I'd been using it for less than a week. And I suddenly know it was covered in sort of white powder. I thought, you know, this, I'm not Tony Montana. It's not like I've been hoovering up kilos of product in my leisure hours. And then I realized it was dandruff.
Oh no.
Yeah.
You've got a dry scalp like Joe Hart.
Well, yes. So I got Head and Shoulders shampoo. Other dandruff getting rid of shampoos are available. And I for whatever reason, I don't know why, I happened to mention this to my mum in a WhatsApp message or on a phone call or something. So then I got a very long warning WhatsApp message from my mum. Don't use Head and Shoulders too often. It'll burn your scalp. You might permanently damage your head. And I got sucked into this rabbit hole of dandruff versus dandruff, anti-dandruff shampoo. Anyway, Joe Hart, he's in the pocket, and I think Raheem Sterling as well. They're in the pocket of big shampoo,
big dandruff. But maybe if it does fry your brain, that would explain Joe Hart's inexplicable decline.
I mean, if I'm taking 2 bottles into the shower, it's a bottle of gin and a single malt.
Hey, Barry. You know, before you went and sat on that bench with that woman who'd been on the bench for a while, did you wash your hair or change the
sheets? I was wearing a hat because the baseball cap I'm wearing now. It was very cold. It was like in early December.
James says, what's the best thing you've seen on a football pitch this year? And what is the best thing that has happened to you this year? I can give you a minute or so to think about the best thing that's happened on a football pitch. Can you remember?
I don't need a minute. It may be recency bias, but the best thing I've seen on a football pitch this year is Matt Ritchie's own goal the other day, where the ball smacked him in the face and just sort of flopped over the line to condemn Newcastle to another defeat.
How do Newcastle fans feel about that? That's what I really want to know. Okay.
Well, Newcastle fans, it has to be said, they want not only to win the Premier League and the Champions League, they want to win the World Cup. They want to win the Euros. They want it all, Max.
I can put forward from my very vaguely serious. I think Erling Haaland's winning goal against PSG in the first leg for Dortmund. For me, I've thought a lot about this because, personally, growing up in I mean, being Norwegian, I have gotten used to us being quite rubbish. I mean, we were quite good in the 90s. We had a lot of players who were relevant, and then in my sort of lifetime, it's been a bit bad. And here comes this man who's tremendous, who's not just Norwegian, but he also grew up in my little town, and he starts scoring a ton of goals. All right, you know, he looks like he was built in a lab, and he looks fantastic, and that's all good. But I think he had moved to Dortmund then, and he had already started scoring goals for them. You could already sort of, you know, there were sort of dissenting voices saying, oh, well, a lot of the goals have been tap-ins, and he's been playing for very attacking sides, and he's scoring a lot of goals against bad teams and this sort of thing. And the goal against PSG, that he just sort of whopped up in the top corner with his left foot there. First of all, it was a very aesthetically pleasing goal, because you don't often see strikers these days just really hit it as hard as they can, just really like have it, and flies into the top corner as well. But it was just an amazing thing for him to do. I think it was the moment where it sort of really clicked for me that there's no other way of looking at this guy than one of the, if not the most exciting striker on the planet, who is not just, you know, an exciting player, but he's from my country and grew up in my particular part of the country. That definitely isn't something I thought I'd ever think and experience in my lifetime. So that's just outrageous.
Can I ask, Lars? He is obviously a terrific player and a very, just still a kid. Are people in Norway surprised? Because I remember his father playing. His father was, while, you know, good enough to be a Premier League player, a bang average Premier League player. Are people surprised that his progeny have turned out so good? Surprised?
I mean, my dad isn't, being from Bryne, a proud Bryne guy. He was always, when I was younger, oh, just wait until Alfie Haaland's kids, you know, start playing football. You know, the things will change for our team. Now, of course, he's moved on a little bit from our small team, although they did get promoted from the third tier in Norway this season. No, of course, people are surprised that Alfinge Haaland's kid has turned out to be like one of the best strikers on the planet. Like, that's not really something you see coming. And just really for a football nation who were relevant and who were good and who qualified for tournaments and then went through like almost two decades of things just not being well, just having good players again is a good feeling. It's fun.
I think the best thing I've seen on a football pitch this year is actually watching lots more Diego Maradona clips since Diego Maradona passed, and seeing that one of you will know the warm up he does before one game.
It was for Napoli in the UEFA Cup in 89. I think it was a semi. It might have been the final, but I think it was a semi.
Bayern Munich, producer Joel says, semi final. And just seeing his control of the ball and then watching that goal against England a million times and just seeing what, you know, just obviously, you know, I knew last year how good Maradona was. And actually, in lockdown, we watched that quarterfinal. And I don't know who watched it with us, Barry. I don't know if you watched it, Jonathan, with us, but we watched it back. And
it wasn't me.
It might have been Moussa and Ryan from Stadio. I forget. But we watched that game and just how, just what a brilliant footballer he was. And, you know, it doesn't.
And, Max, how much England deserved to lose that game.
Oh, yes. Yeah. It totally took away any kind of. I mean, I think I'd forgiven him mainly because Peter Shilton hadn't. And but I just think watching that and watching clips of him was great. I mean, the best thing that's happened to me this year, it's a good question. I mean, if I'm being really, if I want to sound really, Barry, you're going to mock me for this. Probably the best thing, like morally, that has happened to me this year is being taken to task by listeners to this podcast to tell me not to take money from bookmakers and doing that podcast and chatting to those people and making that call, I reckon.
How much do you reckon that's cost you?
I don't want to talk about that.
I was going to send an anonymous email to, I don't know, a certain well-known bookmaker who may have provided you with work in the past, going, please offer Max like 50-100 grand just to do one advert this Christmas, and let's see how strong his resolve is. No, I applaud your stance, Max, but I shudder to think of how much it has cost you.
Wilson, best thing you've seen on a football pitch?
Well, I mean, Lars is right. That Haaland goal, there was something elemental about it, which is very appealing. But given he said that, maybe the FA Cup final, which I really enjoyed this year for the first time in a long time. It just sort of felt meaningful because it was, given the league was sort of done before lockdown, it was the first sort of post-lockdown thing in English football that where there's actually something on the line. And it was a pretty good game. And I drew entirely the wrong conclusions from it, that Arteta was going to do really well. In terms of something on the pitch, it would be that. Off the pitch, I don't know. I took a really, really good catch at first slip.
Oh, God.
On my first league game of the season. It was the guy late cut it, like full-blooded. Right. Dive down to my left, took it one-handed down to my left. So probably that.
Well, there's no greater feeling than doing something good on a sports field. I scored a header against Broomfield opening day of the season from a long throw, and I pushed their midfielder, who was an absolute bastard. And I really pushed him over and headed it in. The ref didn't see it, and they were absolutely furious. It was fucking marvellous.
It is quite funny, actually, because my sporting achievements are very few and far between, but I can remember all of them. I can remember the first try I scored playing rugby. Like, my dad basically dragged me down to the local rugby club when I was age 4 and right, turn him into a rugby player. He named me Barry John after a famous Welsh out half, like, brilliant player. He obviously had high hopes for me. I have hugely let him down. Sorry, Dad. Not that you know what a podcast even is, but
he won't have got to the end of part two, that's for sure. No.
I remember the only goal I scored playing for Burr Town. I remember the highest checkout I've ever got in darts. I remember my highest break in snooker. It is kind of funny. If a policeman came and asked me where I was last Thursday, I would struggle to remember that. But I can remember all those landmark sporting moments. I don't know if you're all the same.
Completely. Yeah.
I don't have many landmark sporting moments. I remember the only goal I ever scored with a header. It was from about 12 yards out. I met it perfectly with my eyes closed. You know, a stop clock is right once a day. But I remember when I opened my eyes, it hit the post. This young lad called Beaver was in goals. Sorry, Beaver, I can't remember your real name, but That was his nickname. B, it hit the post. Beaver hit it back onto the post and then it flooped over the line. I remember that. It's the only ever header I ever scored a goal with. And that was when I was, I don't know, 16 years old. I'm 47 now. I can remember that. I would struggle to remember what I did a week ago.
Well, you so can't remember anyone who plays for West Brom, so...
Yeah, well, no, that's...
I think he's not alone
in
that.
It's not that I don't remember them, I just... I don't know who they are.
A stop clock is right twice a day, Barry, by the way. Emil
says... It depends on if it's digital or whatever the... What's the op...
But there's that point Roddy Doyle makes where he's talking about David O'Leary scoring the winning penalty against Romania in 1990 and sort of saying how unfair it is that... Yeah, Roddy Doyle is clearly preeminent in what he does, but he never gets moments like that. Yeah, he finishes a really good chapter. He can't go running around the garden with his shirt off. It would be ridiculous. Whereas sport does give you those, you know, those very discreet moments you can remember.
But also, what's interesting about that is, I think, is that I, having worked, I don't know, worked in, you know, in and around football for 15 years or whatever, is that I'm working with lots of ex-professional footballers, is I'm glad I wasn't good enough to be one, because I think if you have those, and this pod wasn't necessarily meant to get deep and philosophical, but I guess we're at that stage of how much we've had to drink. But
I'm still way ahead of all of you.
Well, we know that. We know that, mate. But I think it is, I think, you know, it's so hard, like it's so hard, I think, for us, to kind of, we can all remember the goal we scored with nobody support, no fans there, or, you know, the six we hit or the catch we took. To do that at the elite level and to, you know, to have thousands, tens of thousands of people screaming your name, et cetera, to do that and then have to forge a life after it, because you peak at 28, 30, whatever, and we may have peaked in our careers, right? But there is a tiny chance that we haven't peaked in our careers, right? That there still could be betters to come, however unlikely that is. And I really genuinely feel that that is a path to happiness. You know, that dream of being a professional footballer or a professional sports person is sort of one of the hardest ways to find happiness, even if you are absolutely at the top and you're paid more money than you could possibly ever spend.
Well, sorry, Max. The thing I'd say is, I'd wonder if, I don't know, Darren Goff, who you work with time to time, springs to mind. He's probably had an amazing. I take a passing interest in cricket. I can't remember the deal. I'm guessing at some point he's taken a hat trick, or he's
hat trick at Sydney at the SCG against Australia.
First
Englishman, 98, first Englishman to do it for 100 years. Yeah, so
okay, that's probably as good as it gets for Darren Goff. Did he feel any more ecstatic when he did that than I did when I scored a pretty fluky header from 12 or 15 yards? On a deserted, apart from people who were playing, no spectators. Did he feel more ecstatic about that than I did about my header? Possibly not, because I don't think I've ever been happier than when I scored that header. No one was watching. No one cared except me, but it meant a lot to me.
But the person that this really struck home to me, just how an odd life a footballer's life is, Changa Cardenas, who when he was 19 scored the only goal in the playoff between Racing and Celtic to win the Intercontinental Cup final in 1967. And Racing were the first Argentinian team to win it. It's a brilliant goal, like 25-yard shot in the top corner in this brutal game with six sendings off. And it's the most famous game in Racing's history, and he's a Racing fan. And he was 19. He didn't win anything else in the rest of his career. And I went to interview him, and he was working in a real estate office, a crappy real estate office, just like there's a front room and there's a back room and there's like a really sad looking pot plant and this sort of slightly sticky carpet in Floresta in Buenos Aires, like a pretty rundown area. And opposite his desk in his office, there are three things on the wall. So one is a painting somebody did of his goal. One is... it's like a page from El Grafico, with a diagram of the goal, like description of it, an explanation of it, which he's had framed. And the other is, it's like the centre spread from El Tiempo, I think their last issue in 1967, which is El Tiempo's People of the Year, 1967. And there's him next to Marta Mieta, who was like won some sort of global beauty queen thing, and this burlesque comedian who's dressed as an angel. And you sort of think, what a weird thing that every single day, every time he looks up from his desk, he sees how great he was in 1967. And nothing he's done since has come close to that. And that's such a weird life. And you know, why was I there to see him 45 years later, whatever it was, to talk about that? Why does anybody talk to him? What's he get put on telly for every year? To talk about that one thing he did when he was 19. And that, I think, must become an increasingly depressing life. For all, it's great that he did it.
Barry, have you got a painting of that header just behind that Zoom screen?
No, I could do one. I mean, I remember every detail. I literally do.
I think this pod's had enough of that header. I don't know. Okay. I don't know.
Well, I'd ask Jonathan, the guy you're talking about there, was he more than happy to talk to you about it? Was he surprised this fucking weirdo turned up to ask him?
Well, no, he was clearly happy to talk about it. And I think, and you find this a lot with people in Argentina, that if you've bothered to come from Britain to go and talk to them about things they did in the 60s, there's definitely a sort of, I'm really grateful you're here to ask me about it. But at the same time, as soon as he starts the anecdote, he goes into autopilot.
Because he's told like Max with the Trevor Nelson microwaves.
Yeah. And a few other.
When some bloke flies from Buenos Aires to talk to me in 40 years about my electrical appliances, I'll only be more than willing. I'd have to be polite. He's come from Cordoba. I've got to give him the time of day. Sorry. We'll go for a walk later, love. Anyway.
But this is coming up to the anniversary, Max. It was Christmas, wasn't it?
It was 2011.
And you borrowed chairs as well, or did he borrow chairs from you?
No.
Is that the lesser emphasized anecdote?
I borrowed a microwave. I borrowed his microwave. I borrowed a chair. I gave the chair.
Yeah,
back.
We know.
Was that as recently as 2011?
It's testimonial year next year. Next year, Trevor and I are going to hire out Stamford Bridge and have a testimonial for the microwave. He'll come on with 5 minutes to go and take a penalty. I'll have to open the door really powerfully so the penalty can put. It's definitely going to go in the bottom left hand corner, isn't it? If you think about the way the microwave opens. Sorry, Wilson.
But that anecdote feels like it's been part of my life for a good 25 years. It's
like... Listen, that'll do for part two. Here are some more Happy Christmas messages from some of the other podders.
Hello, Merry Christmas, everyone. Wondering why I'm not there this evening, to be honest, as I was invited to the last edition where we enjoyed some sumptuous red wine provided by Jonathan Wilson, and I would have loved to experience the same delights this evening, but unfortunately my Zoom invite must have got lost in my junk mail. But I look forward to seeing you all in the new year. I hope whatever tier 4 or tier 3 or even tier 2, if you're lucky, Christmas you have is merry and bountiful, and I wish you a prosperous new year. And I'll see you on the Zoom very shortly.
Well, let's be frank, it's been an absolutely appalling year. And to use words like happy and merry in a message, even now, seems a little bit far-fetched or not really the right thing to do. But I'll do it all the same. So to all of you who have been listening to us, talking to us, insulting Max, laughing at Barry's jokes, bearing with us more generally throughout this terrible year 2020, I wish you a very Merry Christmas, un très joyeux Noël, and a very Happy New Year. No idea really how it's going to be happy, given how shitty it is right now, but I'll wish it to you anyway. I'll wish us all a Happy New Year 2021. Take care, everyone. God bless.
Hi everyone, this is Ed Ahrens. I just wanted to wish you a Merry Christmas and hope you enjoy the festive tidings. I know it's been a rubbish year, but let's hope for better next year. Take care and see you on the other side.
Hi there, I'm Jonathan Liu. I feel like I'm sort of recording like a generic jingle for some sort of European radio station. I'm Katy Perry and you're listening to Frankfurt Rundfunk 97.1. But happy Christmas to everyone who listened or downloaded or subscribed to Guardian Football Weekly. I hope you enjoyed it this year. If you didn't, all I could say is the jokes were there. Just try a little bit harder next year.
Hello, Football Weekly listeners. It's Jacob Steinberg here, just taking each Christmas as it comes, really. You know, great respect for the boy Jesus. He's got great quality. It's a great festival. And even though, you know, it's coming from the Jewish side of things, we've got a lot of respect for him. Happy Hanukkah.
Have yourselves a merry Football Weekly. Let VAR be right. From now on, our refs will be out of sight. Have yourselves a merry Football Weekly with Max and Barry's pods. From now on, there'll be a pair of drunken sods. So have yourselves a merry Football Weekly now. Merry Christmas, me babbies.
Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Do you want to hear some compliments? We don't often read them out. I don't know if that's too self-indulgent, but some people have sent us some nice messages, Barry.
I think Max, the reason we don't often read them out is because we don't get many.
Well, that might be true.
All we seem to get is why what? Did you only spend people getting the stopwatch out? That's my favourite. You only spent 27.26 seconds talking about.
No, but to be fair, right? To Crystal be fair, they're quite often really accurate when they say.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Cheers, lads! You spent 2.5 minutes talking about Sheffield United's first point of the season, and 2:20 were about what Barry was making for dinner. You're supposed to be the Guardian's football podcast. What are you doing?
No, that is completely fair. I've no answer to that.
Here we go. Alan says, good to have the dream team back in harness, just like Santa's reindeer. Big thanks to everyone involved in the pod for your fantastic efforts this year. You've helped me get through the awfulness that's engulfed us. James says, just want to say thanks for doing this pod continuously throughout the year. You've all been great and kept some semblance of normality when it has been difficult. Jim, love your ability to mix irreverent pods. I feel so shameless doing this.
Yeah, it is. It is slightly masturbatory.
Yeah. Well, that wasn't necessarily the adjective I was looking for, but
okay.
Jim, love your ability to mix irreverent pods with ones about actual issues ominous. And for both types to sound genuine. More of the same, please. The decision to continue the pod after the season was suspended because of COVID should put you in contention for manager of the year. Happy Christmas. Dominic, hi guys. When I can be bothered to listen.
Sorry, is it I really enjoyed the pods when there wasn't actually any football to talk about, possibly because just football gets in the way of things. I'd rather
I agree actually about. I really liked learning about the people who do the pod, you know, like Philippe, for example, like just like the history of Philippe, or you know, how's
but Philippe's life story is ludicrous though.
Yeah, it's better than
Yours is pretty weird as well, Jonathan, to be fair.
Oh, come on. It's not like... I mean, Philippe's is like three different really good lives in one. It's absurd.
It is really hard to listen to the Philippe life story without thinking you completely wasted your time on the earth in comparison.
Dominic says, hi, guys. When I can be bothered to listen, I really enjoy the pod. Merry Christmas, etc. That's the kind of praise that we really wanted. Paul says, thank you, Barry, for reading the lyrics of Scatman. It was the moment of 2020. Mike says, the pod is... way better than silence. Merry Christmas. Hey, Barry, do you enjoy doing Fitbar Corner? Do you think perhaps you bring too much to the table?
Yeah, my incisive analyst.
And we found the moment when
here we go.
This is now the train back from Manchester, everybody.
This is the bit where Lars asked me to do a bit of
okay. So we need to clear up what actually happened there, which was that on the way up to Manchester, you had volunteered to do a listener Q&A for my Norwegian podcast going back down. And then on the way back down, I wisely decided at this point, you are too drunk to do a listener Q&A. I would be doing you a gross disservice if I recorded a Q&A with you on that train.
As I recall, and I don't recall much.
Not at all, no. This...
Your exact words were, I have a duty of care not to let you...
I don't know if you'd be
doing Barry a disservice or you'd be doing the people of Norway a disservice, to be honest. But no, what I enjoyed most about that was it wasn't until I think the pod we did the next day all together when someone said, who is the most drunk? And someone said to Barry, and he was like, you were all pissed. And we all looked at him going, oh dear.
can I actually butt in and say, we asked in the last section, there was the question, oh, what was the best thing you saw on a football pitch and what was the best moment in your life? The best moment is taking it a bit far, but the live shows were tremendously fun. And there's one of the things I missed the most about the lockdown happening and the few shows getting cancelled. And since we mentioned the Manchester trip, like I do some of them. I haven't been on all of them by all means, but I do think when we do this pod, we do talk and then we just kind of send the audio out into the ether and then we go about our day. And I certainly never spend any time thinking about the fact that actually people are out there listening. That doesn't really occur to me. So doing the live shows, when you actually see that there are people there who will occasionally laugh at your jokes, sometimes not laugh at all. That happens to some of us more than others. And that is a lot of fun.
There was the man in Leeds. The man in Leeds who sat in the front row didn't laugh at anything. Oh, man.
He was enormous.
Well, no. To be fair.
You can't tell that.
Ruin Josh's buttons. We can't tell that.
No.
Emil says, we keep hearing talk about managers like Arteta, Lampard, Solskjaer not being qualified for their respective jobs. Who amongst the podders are most overqualified for doing a football pod? Would you say? I mean, Barney's sort of
overqualified.
Well, I take issue with the terms of the question because it implies that football podcasting is not the highest form of human existence. Barney is very well qualified and therefore is very good on the podcast. I mean, I have more degrees than him, but you know that's not the only thing in the world.
How many degrees have you got?
Three.
Three.
Why on earth would you need 3 degrees? I have no degree and I'm doing
one of them I got by mistake.
I sell marginally fewer books than you, despite never having written one.
I feel like the word marginally is doing a lot of
yeah,
work.
Yeah, I mean
I reckon if I wrote a book,
here we go,
despite not having any degrees.
Oh my God.
Whatever book I wrote, and I bought Richard Osman's murder mystery in Tesco.
It's very good.
I bought it in Tesco today, £7.50 hardback.
Oh, you'll enjoy it. It's really good.
No, I'm sure it is. What a talent for family. I think I knew this before, but I relearned. His brother is also in Suede, which Wilson is a very popular pop music combo who were.
I finished reading my first ever book about popular music last night.
Oh, what was it? Smash Hits Annual 2? What did you read?
No, I read Craig Brown's 1, 2, 3, 4 about a little-known group of the 60s called The Beatles.
Oh, right. Did you not read about when he went on to manage Scotland, or you didn't read that bit?
I think it might be a different Craig Brown. But yeah, maybe like Barney, he's multi-talented.
Possible.
But I didn't realise that the Osman, Matt Osman in Suede, was Richard Osman's brother. I mean, so he probably thought he was the superior brother in the mid to late 90s. And then suddenly his brothers come from, by, you know, 3 furlongs behind. He's pipped him. He's got his...
It's like Bob Shankly and Bill Shankly. Until Bill Shankly was 50, he lived in his brother's shadow.
Right, okay. I didn't know that.
So, of course, there's Leon Osman as well, who arguably more famous than the two of them.
While we're on Richard Osman, I said on TalkSport this morning that if I was the Arsenal manager, I reckon I could get them to 12th. And they tweeted out this video and, you know, out of context, Mez53 said, Max can't get far enough up his own arse. He's a clown. To which Richard Osman said, good luck getting those big shoes up your arse too. So yeah, he's talented and funny and everything he touches turned to gold.
And he's incredibly tall.
He is tall, yeah, that's true. All right, well, that's pretty much all for this pod. Phil says, I'm a community respiratory nurse and would like to say a big thank you for keeping the pod going all the way through the pandemic. I feel like you've been surrogate mates between my visits. Big thanks and much love to you all. We've had quite a few messages from people.
Well, it is important, Max, that people, respiratory nurses like Phil, recognise that we are doing the important work. We are the heroes. And, you know, he's doing his bit, going around with oxygen, an ambulance, you know, saving lives. A peripheral hero, I would say Phil is. But, yeah, we are the real heroes here. And, yeah.
How many lives do you think we've saved this year?
How many lives have we saved? I'd say none, Jonathan.
I have this as well, of course, with my better half being a nurse, a community nurse at that, and she comes home and says, "Oh, well, today we had a patient that, you know, something was wrong and then was going to die and then didn't die and it was all good." And I say, "Aha, well, I said something slightly rude about Burnley." And that really puts her in place. You know? Just kind of shows her a bit of perspective. By the way, what do Burnley and the Amish have in common? They're both very heavily reliant on wooden barns.
Very good. It's exactly the same. It's the same with, you know, my wife is teaching in Tower Hamlets in a pandemic where you know, they're teaching online and they're back in the school for a week and then one class gets COVID and they're trying to help these kids who are, you know, really far behind because they've lost so much of their education. But at the same time, I've got an anecdote about a microwave and and I'm going to tell it. So no, listen, we appreciate everybody who listens to this podcast.
Oh, we certainly do. And I want to wish everyone a very... whatever your circumstances, the merriest Christmas you can have and a happy new year.
And if, as long as by the end of Christmas Day you're slurring like Barry, you've had a good day. And look, thanks for listening to us. We do appreciate it. We'll be back with a sort of football-based podcast next. We've got three next week because the football, it never fucking stops. Ever. But we'll leave you with our version of the Queen's speech, which is Barry's Christmas message.
Well, it's been a terrible year. An awful year. It's been pretty crap for all of us. And every one of us can help by making that immortal a message, a keystone of our daily lives. And so to all of you, whether at home, among your families or in hospital, or at your post to carry out your duties that cannot be left undone, as we are here on Football Weekly, we send our Christmas greetings and we wish you
Barry, I think you got your hand over the speaker.
Okay. Do I need to do it again?
Stays in.
No, keep that in. Keep that in.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.